Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
This man, Duncan Hothersall, over at newstatesman.com, believes that she did do something wrong. So we just barely gotten into this story where he is claiming that there's a 500,000 cases of food poisoning each year in the UK alone, and that one of the reasons why we have stringent controls on who can sell food and drink, especially in unsealed containers, is to try to cut those figures down. And street stalls in general are regulated because we have a system of taxation, rights, and responsibilities in this country, which underpins our functioning society. He goes on to say, regulation is a social and economic good, and that's the point at which we got derailed into an argument about that last night.
Whether
if you want to hear that,
good or not.
If you want to hear that, you're welcome to tune in to probably the last, the last segment or so of last night's show. You can download that anytime you want over at freetalklive.com. Basically, Mark was arguing in favor that regulation is a good thing, although he was talking about market regulations, which I don't think you should call certification regulation, but we won't rehash it too far. Yeah, so the arch statist...
I think regulation is a good thing if you're talking about air pressure.
There you go. He says if the council is handing out apologies, it should likely be issuing one to its officers as well. He says, but these are decent folk being persecuted by a nanny state. He's quoting the objections that he might receive. He says, I hear you cry, and I stand impervious, I'm afraid, because I've heard that line a lot recently, and it's really beginning to grate. It's the same argument used against speed cameras and parking fines. How often have you heard those caught out proclaim themselves as law-abiding citizens and bemoan the infringement of their freedom? I have news for you. If you break the speed limit, or park illegally, or indeed break health and safety or training regulations, you are not a law-abiding citizen.
Nobody is. Right? Nobody is.
I bet this guy thinks of himself as one.
I don't know what he thinks. By this standard, no one is a law-abiding citizen. Because if you have gone 1 mile over the speed limit at one point...
You're rolled through a stop sign.
Right, rolled through a stop sign. And by the way, that's the point about discretion that I like to point out with police officers, is when was the last time you saw a police officer pull over another police officer in a cruiser and give him a ticket for rolling through a stop sign?
Never.
Am I to believe that this does not occur? Because... it's a normal way of driving, is that at times not to come to a full and complete rock back stop.
You're using your faculties to observe the intersection.
Right.
Regardless of whether or not this guy believes that he's law abiding or whatnot, I guarantee you that this guy believes that he knows what's right.
If you give a blanket, anybody can open up a lemonade stand to sell their lemonade, right? Because if you say, well, children can sell lemonade, then, well, are you telling me that when I'm 13 years old I can open a lemonade stand, but when I'm 14 I can't? And at what point does it stop and start being okay? Do I have to bring my little brother or my child for decoration to run the lemonade stand? I mean, if I'm running a lemonade stand, but my son's standing there, what's the difference? Because the father was there for this 3.5-year-old. As you can imagine, you're not leaving a 3.5-year-old out there with a pitcher of lemonade, just handing it out to any old buddy who wanders by in one of the most populous cities in Western civilization.
Yeah.
Then you're sort of asking yourself this question. Well, okay, I guess everybody can open a lemonade stand. Fine, we can have these sidewalks littered with stands of people selling things, and basically the businesses behind those sidewalks that are paying for licensure and bricks and mortar and all this other stuff are like, hey, how come we're paying for all this stuff, and all of our business is going out here to the people that have less overhead?
Kids with lemonade stands has not resulted in adults with lemonade stands, has not resulted in adults with root beer stands, has not resulted in, that hasn't happened, what you're saying.
I don't know that it hasn't. If you look at, early 20th century New York City, you will find that these regulations were put in place for this very reason, Ian, because people had carts and horses and all this other stuff, and they were trying to sell out, and the businesses are like, "Why? It's harder to compete with these people out here that are competing against us and don't have the overhead."
But I don't see a big rush of people going to set up lemonade stands.
You
in
don't
the
now because they have a regulation that prevents it.
It's being waived. I thought you said that waiving the regulation would result in the destruction of
For
society.
For whom is it waived?
They just waived the fine for this little girl.
They did not give this the girl a blanket waiver to set up a lemonade stand for the rest of her life on this street corner in London, Ian.
So you're
they said that- they're waiving the fine, not the prohibition.
Hey, I just wanted to pass on a funny bumper sticker I saw the other day.
Sure.
I was at a signal where cars were exiting the post office. So obviously there's some post office workers around 5 o'clock getting off.
Yep.
And the back of the truck, there's a bumper sticker that said, "Don't use the internet for your bills. Mail them." I thought that was sort of hilarious.
This was on a postal service truck or one of their personal trucks?
It was on a personal truck.
Wow.
Coming out of the post office employee parking lot.
They're desperate, huh?
Yeah, I guess that's their method to try to rescue the post office.
They're going
to
rely on bills.
Bumper stickers. You know, I guess I'm for that. You know, trying to rescue your business with bumper stickers, you know, go right ahead. But, basically what the post office has turned into, largely they're subsidized by junk mail. I mean, they're basically a junk mail delivery service that does some letter delivery.
Bills.
And package delivery.
It's bills and junk mail for the most part, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it makes sense, right? It's the government mail service, so why wouldn't it increasingly turn into delivering something that you don't
want? Garbage.
You had said we haven't had a good post office failure story in a while, and I was thinking, first thought that came to my head was, well, how's that? Can that be true? Like, you know, at least hundreds of thousands of those happen every day when people walk into the post office to send something.
Which is something you have to do a lot. So you spend a lot of time, I don't know how much you want to, you know, I don't want you to give away trade secrets or anything like obviously, but you're working for Think Penguin. I don't think that's a secret. Which listeners who recall Chris, who was our Friday night co-host, who might be coming back. I hear he might be back in town. Anyway, he's the
I'm sure he'd certainly like to know if he's going to be on this Friday.
Okay, I've heard he's back in town.
Yeah,
he hasn't been on because he's been out of town. but you're his assistant, and you are running all day long, basically, or at least once a day to the post office. And standing in line, I imagine, right?
Yep.
And I suspect you've had some experiences there. Any worth talking about?
Yeah, well, sure. One happened the other day, but it wasn't had anything to do with them that I found. This was just the way... The very nature of the way the building is designed is bad.
Part of the plight of what's going on with our post office that you folks are neglecting, and I hope not deliberately, because the reality that we need to look at is that corporate greed, America has had a plan to put the post office out of business and switch it all over to FedEx. They're a very non-union kind of a Wall Street.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Right now, they have made it a law that the post office has to set aside billions of dollars, I think every month, for retirement funds for people that won't even be hired for years yet. So why is that happening? Why are they doing that? And why are you not giving it top priority, top billing?
Okay, so let me see.
Are you hearing me?
Yeah, I got what you said here. You're upset because the post office is earmarking money for retirements of people who haven't been hired yet. Well, that's part of the problem with the government retirement system. You know, the average person who works a regular job doesn't get the opportunity to have, you know, 90% of their paycheck come in after they've worked somewhere for 20 years. If they've, you know, once they quit working, they keep getting paid from that place. That's something that pretty much only applies to government workers. You know, there may be some exceptions for it for like CEOs or whatever in the business world. But the average worker, you know, they don't get that benefit. We're not obscuring any information here. That's your government at work.
It's, you know,
I don't think it has anything to do with the government. Do you?
Sure, it does.
I've seen corporate greed. America is saying we want billions of dollars out of the postal system. Yes, fax machines and computers have come in and damaged business, but they can adjust to that. They can downsize.
What do you call it? I mean, you're accusing the competitors of greed, but what do you call it when the post office has a guaranteed business for every piece of mail under a dollar? Every piece of first-class mail out there has to go through the postal service. There's no other option. It's illegal for FedEx and UPS to actually compete with them for first-class mail. What do you call that?
I'm not sure whether I understand what you're saying.
You call it a monopoly. You call it a monopoly. Do you support monopoly?
He might not be aware of these laws. They're called the Private Express Statutes. It's called the PES,
really?
PES laws. The PES laws have been around since Lysander Spooner. Mm-hmm. Lysander Spooner attempted to open a private postal service. The government shut him down.
Well, he
was
beating
said that
them.
It was basically that the postal was too important and that it had to be a government-run monopoly.
No competition.
How much money did the post office lose during 2015?
Let's see here. According to MarketWatch.com, this was a report from last year, so 2016, their multi-billion dollar loss from a 10th...
Was the loss during 2016, or was the article from 2016
that's
putting
what
the loss during 2015?
Trying to determine. Okay. I suspect, given that this article came out in September, at least a portion of this loss came probably during 2015.
During Obama. Let's just be clear.
Right. Fiscal years tend to happen at different dates than the actual year. But anyway, you know, his complaint was about the Republicans. They're not fixing the problem the way they should. Oh, he believes that
if only my people were in office, everything would be beautiful and flowers.
It's
and
ridiculous.
Such.
It's ridiculous.
You can't
fix this thing. It's hemorrhaging cash. And it is not going to stop hemorrhaging cash.
Well, you could fix... Okay, so the post office is unable to fix itself. And
right.
I think that he
and
was
And Congress
making,
ain't going to fix
he
it.
He was making a relevant point to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an accurate statement. Like, the post office doesn't even get the chance to attempt to compete because they are hamstrung
by these
governmental ties. Now,
well,
I'm not sure that they could. I don't think
if they were
got
not
a,
hamstrung, you
right,
mean?
I'm pretty sure they don't have a working business model. Can you imagine a better way to destroy an organization from the inside out? I've got it. Pay that's too high. Compensation that's too high. Especially in the case of government bureaucracies, they've really figured it out over the last few decades is they keep their benefits like optical and dental, these kind of benefits that none of us have except for government employees and quasi-government employees like the post office. They keep their benefits high, and that way the employees are, you know, they're like, I just can't leave. My whole family counts on this.
Yep.
Their health's at stake.
Healthcare.
If I leave, you know, the whole family crumbles. So they're stuck. They're stuck going to a job they hate, and that is a recipe for destruction.
And a job where a lot of people hate them, too, because you go into these post offices, and it's just, I mean, people, like, especially when you're forced to stand in line, and there's, like, they have one person behind the counter and a line of, like, 15, 20 people, and you realize, like, this would never happen anywhere else. You know, you just look at it and go, this is ridiculous. And then finally, like, what happens is, like, after,
and they act
like,
oblivious to
and,
it,
and,
too.
Yeah, and they act completely oblivious to it. And then, like, you know, maybe they'll get, like, two or three deep into that line of, like, 15, you know, the line of 15 that's now become the line of 20. And then they go, can somebody come to the front?
The government-sponsored mail carrier that has now recorded a combined $62.4 billion in losses over the last 10 years. The annual losses the post office has reported since fiscal year 2007 have ranged from a low of $2.8 billion to a high of $15.9 billion in 2012. Meanwhile, the post office reported controllable earnings for the year of $610 million, down from $1.2 billion just 1 year ago.
Jeez.
The USPS defines controllable income as results excluding expenses related to the mandated pre-funding of retirement health benefits, actuarial revaluation of retirement liabilities, and non-cash workers' compensation adjustments. Total revenue did rise to $71.4 billion, up 3.8%. And as a result, and this was mostly as a result of an increase in shipping and packages businesses. So they're seeing a lower amount of mail being delivered overall.
The 9-year-old sending a letter to his grandfather, like he's doing this week, he has to pay 50 cents. Or we pay 50 cents. But
that's like two teeth.
Somebody, no, that's not, believe me, it's been a long time.
You don't get 25 cents a teeth these days, huh?
No, I'm afraid you don't.
What is it, $2.50? What's
like
a tooth
worth?
Five
bucks, man.
What? That's crazy tooth inflation.
you want to be able to buy something with it. What do you want to be able to buy?
Yeah, you can't really buy anything with 25 cents these days, can you?
You can't buy anything with $2.50.
You don't want him to go out buying a candy bar.
Right. I don't want. But that was part of the point was that he would not be able to buy a candy bar, that he'd use it probably for a Lego or something. And you got to have $5 for a Lego. Anyway, you know, he's got to pay full boat, but these advertisers get this huge discount for sending out garbage that I don't want over and over.
Well, you might be interested to know, Mark, that according to the statistics, the garbage is down too.
Yeah, well, it's not as useful as it was.
According to the numbers here, so I told you about the total mail volume down from $212 billion in 2007 to $154 billion. Let's break that down a little further. First-class mail, which is how your son's going to send that letter to Grandpa. First-class mail down by, let's see, $95.9 billion in 2007 down to $61.2 billion. That's like a 33% drop.
The Tooth Fairy is feeling a bit more generous. According to Delta Dental's 13th annual Tooth Fairy survey, cash payouts have soared during the past year to an all-time high average of $4.66, good for a 75% increase from 2015. Last year, the Tooth Fairy paid about $290.6 million, I think, or something.
That's funny. We've never really talked about that before. So, Mark, you're above average, apparently, in the
by 33 cents?
It's above average.
Slightly. Okay, so here's what happened. My son lost his first tooth. He's walking around at like 4 years old, 5 years old. I don't know how old you are when you lose your first tooth, but it was some time ago.
Well,
you
wait
know,
a minute. Cash payouts for a first lost tooth are up to about up about 10% to $572.
So you make more on the first tooth.
So the first tooth, he got short shrifted here.
No. Nope. Let me tell you how it went. So, my wife is, she's using old, 1980s rates on the tooth here. And I'm like,
50 cents maximum.
And poor Jack, he can't do math. He doesn't know what money is. A penny's as good as a quarter to him.
Right.
At 5 years old.
50 pennies, right? And then he'll feel great.
So I jump in real quick and I'm like, whoa. I turn him around, walk him back into the bedroom. We got to have a meeting here before all this goes down.
You became his negotiator?
I set in negotiating immediately for him, and I said, look, bud, I think we need to start talking about this rate, because once you set this rate,
it's
gonna
locked
be difficult
in. Yeah.
To reset it later.
Your story is about 10 ways that people are making their own lives harder, and where is the source of the story?
Thought Catalog.
All right.
So I think everybody does probably one of these or maybe two of these things, and they're very sort of interesting little things that everybody does.
Now, as I say, going from 10 to 1 or 1 to 10?
1 to 10. I don't think the order necessarily matters in this particular one. So here's the first one. You ascribe intent. Another driver cut you off. Your friend never texted you back. Your coworker went to lunch without you.
Mm.
Everyone can find a reason to be offended on a steady basis. So what caused you to be offended? You assigned bad intent to these otherwise innocuous actions. You took it as a personal affront, a slap in the face. Happy people do not do this. They don't take things personally. They don't ascribe intent to the unintentional actions of others.
There's a good chance that whoever cut you off or whatever thing happened that affected you, there's a good chance that person didn't even know you were there or give one brief moment's thought about you. They were busy thinking of their own problems, their own life, their own issues. And
that guy that yelled "get the F out of the way" while you were at the post office probably just wanted to have some business to go about,
Right.
You fast forward to apocalypse.
Yes.
This is
another part of human nature. Right?
This is worrying. Yeah. Right. That's what we're talking about here.
I mean,
the worst thing could happen.
Go
so.
Ahead. Read the part and I'll make my comments.
I have a bad habit of fast. This is I being the author of this.
Yeah.
I have a bad habit of fast forwarding everything to its worst possible outcome and being pleasantly surprised when the result is marginally better than utter disaster or jail time. My mind unnecessarily wrestles with events that aren't even remotely likely. Mm. My sore throat is cancer. My lost driver's license fell into the hands of an Al-Qaeda operative who will wipe out my savings account. Negativity only breeds more negativity. It is a happiness riptide. It will carry you away from the shore, and if you don't swim away from it, it will pull you under.
Yeah,
boy, that's true.
What people do is that they, first off, the person cuts you off. You're on the way to work. I'm going to be late for work. I'm going to get fired.
Can't pay the rent.
Can't pay the rent. My family's going to be out on the street. My children are starving and dying. It's my fault. I'm a failure as a human being, right? Like, it all has to do with this person cut you off. And this is the trick that the survival mechanism known as your brain plays on you, because it needs you to succeed against that other primate over there, right? Like, we're both going for the antelope and only one of us can have it. That kind of thought process.
So you're waiting for a sign. The author here says, I have a friend who won't make a decision without receiving a sign. I suppose she is waiting on a trumpeted announcement from God. She is constantly paralyzed by a divinity that is either heavily obscured or frustratingly tardy. I'm not disavowing that fate or a higher power plays a role in our lives. I'm just saying that it is better to help shape fate than to be governed by it.
Yes. Well, they say you make your own luck in life.
No fate but what you make.
And I think there is something to that. If you are just waiting around for life to happen, life will happen as you wait, but you won't be, you know, really the creator in that. You won't be have a creative role at all. Now, certainly everybody's on their own script, as discussed earlier. You know, you've got the world's revolving around you, but so is that true of everyone else, or so it seems. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, everybody's kind of doing their own thing. If you're just letting things happen, you're not at cause in your experience. Now, certainly things will still happen to you that, you know, you don't expect or you weren't planning for. That's just life. But if you, if you just kind of live life by default, you kind of get that life out of it. You get, you know, not that much out of it. But if you seize the day, so to speak, if you, you know, get out there and create opportunities for yourself where none previously existed, I think you'll see more success out of that.
You let other people steal from you. If you had $1 million cash under your mattress, would you check it regularly and take precautions to ensure it is safe? Oh, I'm sorry. You would check it regularly.
Probably.
And take precautions to ensure it is safe. The one possession you have that is more important than money is time. Yep. But you don't do anything to protect it. In fact, you willingly give it to thieves. Selfish people, egotistical people, negative people, people who won't shut up. Treat your time like Fort Knox. Guard it closely and give it only to those who deserve and respect it.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I tend to agree with that particular viewpoint, but I at the same time tend to, you know, be a little bit on the generous side. So I've had like folks who I don't know from Adam, you know, contact me like, oh, yeah, I heard that, you're this radio host and I wanted to start my own radio show and, you know, get into syndication and wanted to pick your brain about it. And, you know, just to be, you know, kind, I will sit, you know, on the phone and talk to these folks about that. I've never met them before. I don't know them at all. I don't expect that it will turn into anything for me in the future, but, you know, it might. And I sort of live by the rule, like, would I have wanted somebody to do that for me? Then if the answer is yes, then I will do that for those folks, too.
I don't still feel this gaping hole or any hole surrounding most of my, failed relationships.
Yeah, sure.
Every relationship you have,
it takes something away from it.
In either death or, failure, right? Like, it's going to, you know, be a breakup.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't feel anything about these things. You know, I have had a woman who was my fiance. I intended to marry her. We didn't get married. And my only thoughts on it at this point are, whew, you know.
Good thing that didn't happen.
Right. And that's it. Yeah. I don't spend.
Not pining over any of those.
Months not thinking about that particular relationship as I do the relationships that came before it. Big, fat, hairy deal. So I'm not sure that this whole, well, you're always going to feel a loss thing is particularly accurate in that area.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe I'm just a...
They say time heals all wounds.
Wooden jerk. I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, I get where you're coming from, Mark, in that every relationship that fails because, you know, for whatever the reasons were, it wasn't going to work out. You know, you guys maybe grew apart or you weren't right together in the first place. And you just didn't realize that. And it took some time to figure those things out. But usually you end up learning about the things that you don't want to do wrong again the next time. Mm-hmm. So you can always look at it as a positive learning experience, even though it might hurt in the moment to perhaps lose somebody that you really cared about. Ultimately, it's for the best.
Takers are always putting together excuses and reasons why they should be getting more.
More.
And why other people, and why taking is good. And just sort of destroying all that there is that's been created because they're busy taking. You know, I mean, you got to create. You should be a net positive in the world.
I don't know. I kind of think of this, though, because I don't think it's as simple as givers and takers. They say there's two types of peoples in this world.
I
immediately think of like sort of the Ayn Randian kind of philosophy. And I don't think that it just comes down to givers and takers, because I think that I think it's not givers and takers. It's producers and takers, because I think that there are people who produce but don't necessarily, they're not just giving, you know, they're doing things, and they don't necessarily have to give. They could let other people earn they give opportunities, but mm-hmm. they don't necessarily just give away their time and give away their stuff.
When you give an opportunity to a taker, you feel like you've lost.
Well, yeah, I agree.
Right. You know, like, yeah. you put together a business arrangement.
And they don't want to give. You know, these people, sometimes producers do not want to give to takers.
On July 3rd, Representative Park Young-jin of the ruling Democratic Party of Korea revealed that the South Korean government is ready to regulate the Bitcoin market. According to Representative Park, he submitted 3 revisions to build a set of regulatory frameworks for Bitcoin users and businesses to further facilitate the growth of South Korea's Bitcoin market and industry. Now, normally when I hear about regulations, I would say that is not a good thing. However, sometimes markets like it when governments regulate things. You remember the ETF thing that was bandied about earlier this year? I think it was
exchange-traded
fund. Well, supposedly there's still, you know, several in the pipeline.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the Zuckerbergs are working on that, right?
There was a bunch of hullabaloo.
I think it was theirs. That was
Winklevoss twins, yeah.
It was them who was rejected.
That's correct. Their ETF thing was rejected. But there was all this hullabaloo about it, about, you know, ooh, if the government approves this ETF, these 3 letters, if they say yes to these 3 letters, then, you know, all these investors are going to pour money into Bitcoin. And the idea was that, you know, the Bitcoin price would go up. And if it is indeed true that South Korea has somehow made it easier to do Bitcoin, so it says here they've legalized international Bitcoin transfers. Well, does that mean that it was illegal before in South Korea to transfer with Bitcoin?
A guy and his wife, he was about 60, came in and was just doing some random shopping. He's a Portsmouth resident, mm-hmm. and wanted to buy some gifts for some friends of his. His wife was looking to get some coasters that were actually made by a porcupine, a Free State Project participant that we stock in our store, some coasters and a Bitcoin t-shirt. And he had a Bitcoin wallet on his phone already.
Yeah.
Didn't know this guy from anything. And I said, you know, Bitcoin probably has high fees for a $5 coaster. You might want to use it in different cryptocurrency. Had a Litecoin wallet right on his phone.
Wow.
Was ready to spend. Scanned the address and we were done instantly.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.